This is Eagle 1490 AM WLCX La Crosse and streaming everywhere on the Civic Media app.
ABC News, I'm Michelle Franzen. Election day now just 30 days away. Candidates focusing on battleground states. President Biden Friday said he's confident there will be a fair and free election, but voiced concern about a peaceful transition. House Speaker Mike Johnson on ABC's This Week was asked about Congress's duty of certifying the results.
Congress has a very specific role, and we must fulfill it. I've made a career defending the Constitution. I always have. And I've demonstrated over and over that we are going to do the right and lawful thing. So you can count on that. We're going to do our job.
Hurricane Helene now blamed for at least 227 deaths. And now Tropical Storm Milton is threatening Florida's west coast, still recovering from Helene. Milton's set to become a major hurricane and make landfall Wednesday. Israel still weighing its options on a response to Iran's missile attacks. Iranian state media tonight reporting Iran's civil aviation, canceling flights in and out of the country starting in the next hour. This is ABC News. Tomorrow, Supreme Court justices return to begin a new term. The High Court has added more than a dozen cases to its calendar, including a case involving major American gun makers and the government of Mexico, which is suing the companies for $10 billion.
Smith & Wesson, Beretta, Colt, and Glock are among the firms hoping the Supreme Court blocks the Mexican government's lawsuit. The $10 billion claim filed in Massachusetts federal court is based on the idea that the companies knew their guns were being sold to traffickers to smuggle them into Mexico. The firms insist they've operated legally and that the case has no business in American courts. Mexican authorities say 70% of the weapons that flow into their country come from the U.S.
ABC's Stephen Portnoy. At the Vatican, Pope Francis named 21 new cardinals today, marking a significant increase of the College of Cardinals and further cementing his mark on the group who will one day elect his successor. Michelle Franzen, ABC News.
Max Inc. on Civic Media, live in the lair with Kaylin Cole.
Have you ever walked away from a karaoke performance thinking, yeah, that was a lot better than the original person?
Oh my gosh, I don't know if I should admit that or not.
I think you should. Because now we know there's a song.
Jimmy's talking on it now.
I know. Oh, you're going to get me in trouble, Jimmy.
It's live in the lair. Grab the podcast now at maxincradio.com and listen live on Saturday night, 6 to midnight, across the Civic Media Radio Network. The Maggie Dawn Show.
Congresswoman Summer Lee.
The American Stability Act doesn't just address the need for raising of the wage. The second thing is that tax reform piece, shifting the burden from the folks who are working class to not just the 1%, the 0.01% of people who have seen so many benefits in this rigged system, and we have to start to unrig it.
The Maggie Dawn Show, weekdays from 2 till 4 on your local Civic Media radio station and on the Civic Media app. Your news, conversations, and a whole lot of fun. It's all on your local Civic Media radio station or the Civic Media app.
For Civic Media News, I'm Terry Bell. A program that helps cover the cost of replacing polluted wells is popular in Wisconsin, but officials say more permanent changes are needed. Mike Moan reports.
Running your kitchen faucet and suspecting the water is contaminated can be a scary thought. Tom Van Lowe and his wife live in a farming community in Marathon County. Their property is surrounded by cropland. Van Lowe says over time they had a buildup of nitrates in their well, with test results eventually showing excessive levels. County officials helped them apply for aid through the State Well Compensation Grant Program, which funded a reverse osmosis system. That was a lifesaver for the couple.
We knew for years that we were drinking contaminated water, so it gave us a lot of peace of mind.
Van Lowe says they likely wouldn't have been able to afford the roughly $12,000 cost, and they no longer have to stock up on bottled water. Agencies and assistance groups report waiting lists for these grants, saying eligibility is pretty restrictive. Chase Cummings of the Dunn County Environmental Services Department says that existing eligibility requirements for the well compensation program make it hard for people to clean up their drinking water.
Nitrate concentrations must exceed 40 parts per million. The health standard is 10 parts per million. So you'd have to have a very high nitrate concentration in your private well. And if you were to use the current well comp program eligibility, we would have one individual eligible.
That puts many other property owners in a bind because they don't qualify. Cummings says county governments are being more intentional about careful land use. That includes working with farmers to adopt conservation practices so that lower levels of nitrate find their way to surrounding water sources. This is Mike Moen for Wisconsin News Connection.
You're listening to Civic Media News. I'm Terry Bell.
This is your hometown radio, Refreshed, keeping you informed, entertained, and connected locally across the Civic Media Network.
I'm meteorologist Rodney Price. Plentiful sunshine and plenty of wind today. Northwest winds just up over 30 miles per hour at times. Sunshine in mid-60s. Tonight we'll see clear skies. Northwest winds will become light and a little frost possible. Lows in the mid and upper 30s. It's 60 at our studios.
Todd Albaugh. Hey, everybody, join us next time. We'll look back at the weekend happenings news-wise and also a little sports and get you ready for the week ahead. Don't miss it. Join us right here on Civic Media.
The Todd Albaugh Show, weekdays noon till 2.
You're listening to The Eagle, WLCX, LaCrosse's home for The Todd Albaugh Show.
You're listening to pre-recorded content produced by Civic Media.
Folks, if you are just tuning in, you are listening to The Cripescast on Civic Media, and this is my conversation with comedian Steve Trevino.
You know, I gravitated to the Comedy Store because it was the hardest. It was the hardest room. And when I moved to LA, everybody was afraid of it. And you had all the people that hung out at the Improv. Then you had all the people that hung out at the Laugh Factory. And then all these savages hung out at the Comedy Store at that time. And I would watch everybody go on stage in these different rooms. And the most challenging room was the Comedy Store. So I was like, if I can get good here, then I can be good. And, you know, I was just looking for the more challenging room and the harder path, because I know the harder path leads to, you know, being better. So when I saw the Comedy Store, I was like, man, I gotta go hang out over there. And I gotta figure out this stage. And, you know, cause for several years in Dallas, I was the house MC at the Addison Improv, but I'm getting these badass headlining weeks with, you know, big names and sold out shows. And I thought I was amazing, you know, and then I go on tour on the Three Amigos tour and we're doing arenas and I'm killing. I'm like, man, I'm going to be famous tomorrow. I'm so good. I walk on stage at the Comedy Store and I was like, oh my gosh, like this is hard. But yet these other guys are killing in here. I got to do that. So that's why I gravitated to the Comedy Store, because I wanted the more gritty, the harder room to really sharpen my tools. And I think a lot of times, man, people take the path of least resistance, and I'm kind of a stubborn soul, man. I'll go the hard way, because my whole life has not been easy. I've worked my whole life and it's just my attitude. Let me conquer the hard stuff instead of staying in a comfort zone.
Yeah. Yeah. By the way, what was your first job?
Ooh, roofing houses at 12 years old.
Oh, wow.
Yeah. My dad put me on a roof at 12 for my uncle's company. And I would roof houses. We would build hurricane shutters. We would paint like 7-Elevens and Circle K's. And, you know, so I worked construction with my uncle from 12 to 16. And then I started waiting tables at 16. And then worked the door and waited tables at the Improv. And then I've been a comedian professionally since I was 21. I turned 21 on the road.
Wow. Yeah. Do you think it's that early work ethic? Is that where it came from? The work ethic, working with your dad, working with your uncle, construction, that bled into the comedy stuff.
And you know, I took a blue collar approach to stand up. I was like, I'm going to find a way to outwork everybody. And if there's a $25 set and then I can run over across town and get another $50 set. And then the next day I can do it again. And then I can get 100 here and 100 there. And little did I know doing all those sets made me a better comedian. But I was like, I am not getting a real job anymore. I'm going to work my ass off. If I have to go make 25 bucks over here and 50 over here and 75 over here, I'm going to go get it. And I just had that attitude, but man, 1000%. And when you grow up in Gregory, Portland, Texas, around a bunch of farmers pipe fitters, welders, refinery workers. I mean, I'm country. I wear cowboy boots. I grew up, you know, going country dancing and two-stepping and getting in fist fights and hunting and fishing. And I mean, you don't get any more country than the way I grew up to then go to Hollywood. I didn't know how to network. I didn't know how to, you know, to get a headshot together or a website together. I was like, man, I'm going to freaking go on stage and try to be the best I can be.
When you got to LA, did you have like a crew that you came up with, or did you kind of do it? You know, were you kind of like a lone wolf?
And I was kind of a lone wolf, only because I didn't come up with any of those guys. You know, a lot of those guys started The Door together, so they had their little group. I was in Addison doing my thing, getting on the road, touring. Then I moved to LA. I'm already touring. I'm already on the road. I'm working for a show on Comedy Central, and I'm a kid. I mean, I'm 23, 24 years old. Everybody else my age was still working The Door, doing their 7 minutes at the comedy clubs. And here I was, had already been on tour, already headlining Improvs and Funny Bones, already on a show on Comedy Central. So, you know, I was kind of on my own, and I've always been kind of and it's terrible to say, but I never really got along with anybody out there. I never meshed with anybody.
That kind of makes sense.
I was not them, you know. I wore cowboy boots. I drove a 1978 K5 Blazer.
Oh,
you know, I worked on my own car. I just wasn't them. Does that make sense?
It makes a lot of sense. And I mean, I've been in LA myself, and coming from Wisconsin, not the same kind of upbringing as you, but I started working at 12 myself as a caddy. Much more cushy job than the roofing. By a long shot.
A little more white.
Yes. Oh yeah. Yeah.
Yeah.
You go out to those things. But I mean, I did a bunch of different jobs, caddying, lawns as a bike mechanic, all that. Auntie Anne's pretzel roller. I had a high turnover in my jobs. I think the thing that you get when you start working that early is sort of like so many moments of work. I don't know what kind of a worker you were, but for me, I was like, I could not stand work, like the time I was spending to get the money I was getting. And I think when I had just the sense of an opportunity to make money doing something I kind of liked, I just held on super tight, you know? And it seems like maybe there's a similar thing with you of like, I'm not going back to that kind of a thing.
I mean, at one point, you know, when I was dating my wife, she goes, you gotta go get a job. She goes, you know, we're not making it. And I go, I can go work at Target, or I can go wait tables, or I can make $1,500 telling jokes for a weekend. I just got to get more of those.
Right.
So let me work on it. And it, you know, ultimately it worked out. But yeah, I mean, I just never meshed with those guys in LA, and I'm friends with them, and we all know each other. And, you know, I say hello, but I used to look at them and go, I don't name any names because I love comedians, and there's a comedian for everybody. So I don't ever say anything negative about comedians, but I would look at some of these guys and go, I don't want to be you. I don't want to be 45 years old, standing at the Comedy Store every night till 3 a.m. Mm-hmm. I want a wife. I want kids. You know, I want to wake up with my kids and take them to school. I want to coach Little League. I want to be involved. I have no, there's nothing inside of me that feels like I have to go to, I live here in Texas. I don't have to go to the mothership to hang out.
Right.
It's not in me. And I know, and I used to watch these guys and go, number one, you have a career. You have all the money in the world. I'm at the Comedy Store because I have to be, and I have to be seen, and I have to get better. But you have a career. I also know you have a wife and kids. Why are you here on a Tuesday till 3 o'clock in the morning?
Probably because he's got wife and kids.
But I get it, right? But yeah, I love my wife and kids. Yeah. And I want to wake up in the morning. So I was just cut from a different cloth. I have a life. I live a normal life. Comedy is not, it doesn't define who I am. You know what I mean?
Well, I think beyond that, you kind of, you can sort of see people who, if you spend all your time doing that, you miss out on the things that, like what you're saying, the little coaching Little League bit, you know, you don't have that if you are spending your time in that situation. I think that's a hard thing for comedians to figure out, especially as they get past a certain point, is how do I stay relatable when my life is now very unrelatable?
Right. You know what it's like when your helicopter comes to pick you up. You get it. And it's like, no, dude. Yeah, I don't get it. You know, my private jet, like, oh, yeah, that's real freaking relatable. Right? Yeah. Well, I just started to admire the Ray Romanos and the Jeff Foxworthys and the Jim Gaffigans and the Larry the Cable guys. And I started looking at these guys and I said, man, these guys have a whole career and I don't see them at the Comedy Store every night.
Right.
You know, I want to be those guys. You know, Jeff Foxworthy lives in Georgia and has always lived in Georgia and does his church Bible study at a McDonald's on Tuesdays.
Mm-hmm.
And raises his kids and is happily married. And I'm like, that's what I want.
Yeah.
You know, and if you want that, you have to work it into your life, into your career. But like you said, it helps my stand up and it keeps me relatable.
Coaching Little League. What? There are a lot of parents out there. Some of them I know who are considering being a coach. Do you have any advice for them? Maybe three pieces of advice. Anything you want to tell them?
Don't be the head coach. Okay. Do not be the head coach. Do not have to break parents' hearts. You know, just like in comedy, you have delusional parents. You know, and you have to deal with that. I mean, I'm the assistant to the assistant to the assistant. And I still have parents calling me going, Steve, you know, I think this or I think that. Can you help us? And it's just like, I don't make the decisions. I go out there. I'm the hype man. I help out. I have fun. I want my kid to see that I'm involved so that when I go on the road, maybe someday when I'm dead and gone, and my son's a grown man, he can say, you know what? My dad tried. You know, my dad went out of his way to be with me. My dad went out of his way to coach. So my advice is don't be the head coach, number one. Number two, shoot everybody completely straight.
Mm-hmm.
Right? Don't hold back. And once they learn that you're going to tell them the truth, they will stop calling.
Truth will set you free.
Yes. Once you sit there and you go, your kid has no business on this team, but he is on this team because your check cleared. And we're going to do our best to make him a better player because we love your kid.
Uh-huh.
But don't bitch because he sits on the bench because that's where he belongs right now. And all of a sudden, your phone call stops.
Mm-hmm.
So, mm-hmm. But I mean, I just love being involved.
Yeah.
Because I coach jujitsu and football and baseball.
Yeah. Do you see in coaching, do you see sort of other coaches that do the thing where they take it too seriously?
Oh my God, dude, all the time, you know, and as a matter of fact, you know, I've had several times where I've had to go, hey man, let's go have coffee. And then we sit down and have coffee and I go, hey dude, they're eight. Like, are we aware that they're eight? You know, nobody's going to D1 baseball right now. Let's chill out.
Yeah.
Let's make it fun and let's have a good time doing it. Of course, we want to try to win, but dude, chill out. Oh, yeah. Some of these dads, I mean, winning a championship ring to them with eight-year-olds is their entire life.
That's what I was asking. Like, where does that... Is that it? Like they're sort of living vicariously through their kid, or do they think themselves that they're going to go from Little League to high school to college to the majors themselves? Like, where's the mentality? Is it for their kid or themselves?
I think there's a little bit of both. Really? I think there's a little bit of living vicariously through their kids, and then a little bit of, oh, I want my kid to go pro. You know, and my philosophy is, I'm just trying to raise a good man.
Yeah.
That's it. I want my kid to be a good man. Baseball teaches a lot of those lessons. how to win, how to lose, how to be a teammate, how to root for your teammate when they're not doing well, how to be a leader. I mean, it teaches a lot of things that I'm trying to teach. I'm not trying to raise a D1 athlete because his college is already paid for. You know, I want him to have a good time, hang out with his homies, stay out of trouble, and be a good man. That's my goal.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. That seems to make a lot of sense. Yeah, I just still imagine some of those like Little League coaches. They just see that Little League World Series on at the bar once a year, and they're like, "I want to be that guy," you know.
And they do, and what they don't realize is, you know, my son is very, very good, man. And I mean, he's ranked at 9 years old. He is ranked as one of the best players in the country already.
Holy smokes.
And people come up to me and go, how do you do it? And I go, zero private lessons, number one. Number two, my son loves it. He absolutely wants to play all the time. And you know what I do? I play with him. Mm. It's that simple. I play with my kid. He freaking loves it and wants to play. I don't hire batting coaches, and I don't hire and all these other guys. Oh, he's got, you know, private lesson on Thursday and for batting. And then he's got a private lesson on Saturday morning for fielding. And I'm like, guys, you're beating these kids up. And I never yell at my kid. As a matter of fact, my kid will yell at me while we're practicing. I'll walk off and my son will go, Dad, where are you going? And my response, and he already knows my response. My relationship with you, son, is more important than baseball. And you're worked up. You're yelling. And that's not fun for me as a dad in our relationship. So I'm not upset that you missed the ball five times in a row. I don't care. You're the one making a big deal and I'm not comfortable with it. So I'm going to go inside. And then he'll go, no, I'll fix it. I go, great. Because my relationship with you is more important than you hitting a home run.
Wow. Now, is that the way you were raised?
No.
How would your dad have handled that situation?
Dude, my dad would have been like, get your together. You dead. You want to play ball or not? Pick your glove up. Put your ass down. Let's go. What is wrong with you? You're wasting my time. I mean, that's what I got, right? And then I'm over there crying. Now you're crying. You're crying, you little bitch. You know, and it's like, oh, awesome.
Dry him up, bro. I'll give you something to cry about.
Yeah. All healthy, Dad. This is awesome. I think I'm going to go be a comedian. Thanks for the abuse.
Yeah. Do you ever want your son to be a comedian? Feel like, you know, maybe you should give him a few more bits in his repertoire?
Ever. I don't want my kid in this business at all.
Yeah.
It is a dirty, gross business. And as a Mexican-American, he has no chance. It is impossible almost. And I hope that changes. And I hope that it gets better. But as a Latino in this business, it is literally almost impossible.
Yeah. Dive into that a little bit. You know, I'm a pretty white guy on both sides of the deal. So if I were doing roofing, I would be very sunburnt immediately. I would have melanoma right now.
They'd be calling you Weddle. They'd be like, oh, here comes the Weddle. You know, that means white guy.
Yeah.
Well, no. So let's play a little game.
Yeah.
How many truly famous comedians who are of Latin descent have ever hosted SNL?
I can't tell you. I don't know.
There's zero. In 45 years of SNL, zero Mexican-American comedians have ever hosted SNL. Let's play another game. How many Mexican-American comedians that you know have had a network sitcom?
One.
Lopez. And then Cristela had one for a season.
Yeah, she was a guest. It was just a season, right?
Just one season.
Okay.
Only George Lopez is in sitcom syndication. How many? Now let's get rid of the idea of stand-up comedy, mm-hmm. right? How many leading Latino men can you think of? TV show, movies, anything. It's crazy, right? Please. Michael Peña, he works. Sofia Vergara, Eva Longoria, Salma Hayek, Antonio Banderas. But we're already running out of names.
Yeah. No, I. Right? Yep.
So how many black comedians have hosted SNL? The list goes on forever.
Right.
How many black comedians have had TV shows? The list goes on forever. How many Latinos have had HBO specials? Four in the history of comedy. So when you look at the numbers and you look at the odds of a Mexican-American working in this business, it is slim to none.
Mm.
Right? Because, like I said, you know, only George Lopez has had a sitcom. I've never even had a sitcom deal. Not even a deal. The funny part is you're going to get a lot of comments. So I'm going to go ahead and answer those comments because people are going to go, oh my God, here we go. You know, he's crying about race. Why don't you just work harder? First of all, I'm not crying about it because I continue to work hard and I continue to succeed, right? Mm-hmm. I'm simply putting the facts out there,
mm-hmm.
right? And I had to work and I continue to work my butt off to continue to succeed. Every one of my specials is self-produced. I produced it. I paid for it. My wife directed it. I paid for it. No, I've never been given a special. Now, Simple Man was paid for partially by Netflix. And I greatly appreciate Netflix for doing that. But when you look at the scope of being a success as a Latino and a Mexican-American in the business, there's just not that many of them.
And you don't see that changing at all as even as you don't see that changing. Yeah, I guess you don't see that changing.
You try, you know, John Leguizamo, man, good for him. He you got to look at his Emmy speech because he talks about this exactly in his Emmy speech. And he says, well, tonight I'm less angry. He goes, because this is the first Emmys ever to have this many Latinos nominated. So I think Selena Gomez won something for Murderers in the Room or whatever. But John Leguizamo addresses it in his speech. And I hope it changes. And I fight very hard for it to change. And I hope, you know, I'm continuing to press forward to hopefully be that person. Are part of the people that make things change, you know. So I'm doing what I can and doing my part by doing my podcast with my wife, who is also Mexican-American, showing America that we can succeed. My specials have been successful. I sell tickets in Wisconsin. I sell tickets in Boston. I sell tickets in Canada, you know, proving that we can succeed. So hopefully there's somebody or something that can break that barrier to change it, because the bigger issue is that we're always the stereotype.
Yeah.
You know, every audition I get is accent, Spanish. Can you do that? I will say I am starting to get auditions that are just general auditions, which for the first time in my entire career, these past 5 years, I am getting general auditions, but not a lot. Right. So, you know, when I started in this business in 1999, nobody had a TV show, and there was only three famous Latino stand-up comedians in the world. And that was George Lopez, Paul Rodriguez, and Carlos Mencia
mm-hmm.
in the world. Three. And that was 1999. So for me to get in the business at 99 thinking, oh man, I got a shot. I was out of my mind, because at that point, George Lopez didn't even have a TV show.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, and in a lot of ways, you kind of look at where the industry as a whole is going, and that's frankly imploding in a large way. And a lot of what's happening is people are following people like you or people like me or whoever. They have sort of a niche audience. And then you get these sort of, like, you have a whole production company in addition to a touring thing, you know, with the podcast and your clips and all of that. And so you have these audiences that are kind of like, I like this thing, I'm subscribed to this, I guess, or I'm following this. I like this, I'm following that. Do you...
Well, that is all the time we have for now. But if you want to listen to the Kripescast, the full episode, just look for Kripescast anywhere you get your podcasts.
So roll out the barrel and get the band brewing. Life's got you down. Just keep her moving. It's on Wisconsin. The Badgers say it's the old Wisconsin Jubilee.
You know, sometimes when you're ice fishing, you put your foot into walleye hole and go ass over tea kettle and you think you're done. No, you gotta keep her moving.
Eagle 1490 AM.
ABC News, I'm Michelle Franzen. Election Day, now just 30 days away. Candidates focusing on battleground states. President Biden Friday said he's confident there will be a fair and free election, but voiced concern about a peaceful transition. House Speaker Mike Johnson on ABC's This Week was asked about Congress's duty of certifying the results.
Congress has a very specific role, and we must fulfill it. I've made a career defending the Constitution. I always have. And I've demonstrated over and over that we are going to do the right and lawful thing. So you can count on that. We're going to do our job.
Hurricane Helene now blamed for at least 227 deaths. And now Tropical Storm Milton is threatening Florida's west coast, still recovering from Helene. Milton set to become a major hurricane and make landfall Wednesday. Israel still weighing its options on a response to Iran's missile attacks. Iranian state media tonight reporting Iran's civil aviation canceling flights in and out of the country starting in the next hour. This is ABC News.
You can always continue the conversation on social media. Share your thoughts when you find and follow Civic Media on Facebook, X, and Instagram.
The pack looks to bounce back. Hi, I'm Jimmy Cuska filling in for Mike Clements for Civic Media Sports. The Green Bay Packers take on the LA Rams this afternoon. Green Bay will be without wide receiver Romeo Doubs, who is suspended for one game for conduct detrimental to the team. Jordan Love will make his second start since spraining his MCL in the season opener. Kickoff is after 3 p.m. You can hear the game on WRJN, WRCO, and WCQM on the Civic Media Network. Other NFL games today include the Vikings and Jets in London and the Bears taking on the Falcons. In college football, the Badgers beat Purdue 52-6 yesterday. Wisconsin piled up 589 yards of offense, and Braden Locke became the first Badgers quarterback to throw for 300 yards in a game in 9 years. The Badgers will play at Rutgers this Saturday. And now that training camp is done, the Milwaukee Bucks will begin preseason play tonight against the Detroit Pistons. Tip-off is set for 7 p.m. Filling in for Mike Clemens, I'm Jimmy Cuska with Civic Media Sports.
Progressive presents 10 things on a contractor's to-do list that are harder than getting a commercial auto insurance quote. Bidding a new client, giving an accurate estimate, finding affordable materials, getting a client to pay you for work you already did.
I'm meteorologist Rodney Price. Plentiful sunshine and plenty of wind today. Northwest winds just up over 30 miles per hour at times. Sunshine in mid-60s. Tonight we'll see clear skies. Northwest winds will become light and a little frost possible. Lows in the mid and upper 30s. It's 60 at our studios.
Progressive presents 10 things on a contractor's to-do list that are harder than getting a commercial auto insurance quote. Bidding a new client, giving an accurate estimate, finding affordable materials, getting a client to pay you for work you already did, getting a client to pay you, period, securing permits and workers and tools, getting those workers and tools to work together, and finding the perfect pair of overalls. Pockets, baby. But the easiest thing on a small business owner's to-do list? Seeing if you can save on commercial auto insurance. Get a quote in as little as 7 minutes at ProgressiveCommercial.com. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Coverage subject to policy terms and conditions.
The green and gold tailgating, the frozen tundra. Lambeau Field has a legacy all its own, including where to build it. Residents on both sides of Green Bay argued for it. Officials wanted property with room for growth. In the end, 50 acres of farmland was purchased, but the address, Ashwaubenon. More bargaining, and in 1956, the land was annexed to Green Bay. Now, do you know the other reason leaders considered this annexation so important? Parking, beer sales, keeping the Packers in Green Bay? The answer coming up. The Green Bay City Stadium project moved quickly from there, and in less than a year, opened with a Packers-Bears game. It became Lambeau Field in 1965 following the death of team co-founder and coach Curly Lambeau. So did you guess why the land annexation was so important? It's all three, keeping the team in the city, parking, and beer sales. Ashwaubenon was dry at the time. Officials believe Packers fans wanted to be able to buy beer and could in Green Bay. This history makes it a true slice of Wisconsin. I'm Terry Barr for the Civic Media Radio Network.
Nightlight with Pete Schwaba.
She is performing in Wisconsin early next month down in Baraboo. Charo, what is the secret? Is it the music? Is it the dancing? Are your shows what keep you young?
Yes, I will never get old.
while music is alive.
Yeah.
You got to move it, move it. I have ants in my pants. I had to move.
Nightlight with Pete Schwabba. Weeknights from 6 till 8 on your local Civic Media radio station and on the Civic Media app.
You're listening to pre-recorded content produced by Civic Media.
Folks, if you are just tuning in, you are listening to the Cripescast on Civic Media, and this is my conversation with comedian Steve Trevino.
You know, I gravitated to the Comedy Store because it was the hardest. It was the hardest room, and when I moved to L.A., everybody was afraid of it. And you had all the people that hung out at the Improv, then you had all the people that hung out at the Laugh Factory, and then all these savages hung out at the Comedy Store at that time. And I would watch everybody go on stage in these different rooms. And the most challenging room was the Comedy Store. So I was like, if I can get good here, then I can be good. Mm-hmm. And, you know, I was just looking for the more challenging room and the harder path, because I know the harder path leads to, you know, being better. So when I saw the Comedy Store, I was like, man, I gotta go hang out over there, and I gotta figure out this stage. And, you know, because for several years in Dallas, I was the house MC at the Addison Improv, but I'm getting these badass headlining weeks with, you know, big names and sold out shows. And I thought I was amazing, you know. And then I go on tour, on the Three Amigos tour, and we're doing arenas and I'm killing. I'm like, man, I'm gonna be famous tomorrow. I'm so good. I walk on stage at the Comedy Store and I was like, oh my gosh, like, this is hard. But yet these other guys are killing in here. I got to do that. So that's why I gravitated to the Comedy Store, because I wanted the more gritty, the harder room to really sharpen my tools. And I think a lot of times, man, people take the path of least resistance, and I'm kind of a stubborn soul, man. I'll go the hard way, because my whole life has not been easy. I've worked my whole life, and it's just my attitude. Let me conquer the hard stuff instead of staying in a comfort zone.
Yeah. Yeah. By the way, what was your first job?
Oh, roofing houses at 12 years old.
Oh, wow.
Yeah. My dad put me on a roof at 12, for my uncle's company. And I would roof houses, we would build hurricane shutters. We would paint like 7-Elevens and Circle K's. And, you know, so I worked construction with my uncle from 12 to 16. And then I started waiting tables at 16, and then worked the door and waited tables at the Improv. And then I've been a comedian professionally since I was 21. I turned 21 on the road.
Wow. Yeah, do you think it's that early work ethic, is that where it came from? The work ethic, working with your dad, working with your uncle, construction, that bled into the comedy stuff.
And I took a blue collar approach to stand up. I was like, I'm going to find a way to outwork everybody. And if there's a $25 set, and then I can run over across town and get another $50 set, and then the next day I can do it again, and then I can get 100 here and 100 there. And I, little did I know, doing all those sets made me a better comedian. But I was like, I am not getting a real job anymore. I'm going to work my ass off. If I have to go make 25 bucks over here and 50 over here and 75 over here, I'm going to go get it. And I just had that attitude, but man, 1000%. And when you grow up in Gregory, Portland, Texas, around a bunch of farmers, pipe fitters, welders, refinery workers. I mean, I'm country. I wear cowboy boots. I grew up, you know, going country dancing and two-stepping and getting in fist fights and hunting and fishing. And I mean, you don't get any more country than the way I grew up to then go to Hollywood. I didn't know how to network. I didn't know how to, you know, to get a headshot together or a website together. I was like, man, I'm going to freaking go on stage and try to be the best I can be.
When you got to LA, did you have like a crew that you came up with, or did you kind of do it? Were you kind of like a lone wolf?
And I was kind of a lone wolf, only because I didn't come up with any of those guys. You know, a lot of those guys started the door together, so they had their little group. I was in Addison doing my thing, getting on the road, touring. Then I moved to LA. I'm already touring. I'm already on the road. I'm working for a show on Comedy Central, and I'm a kid. I mean, I'm 23, 24 years old. Everybody else my age was still working the door, doing their 7 minutes at the comedy clubs. And here I was, had already been on tour, already headlining Improvs and Funny Bones, already on a show on Comedy Central. So, you know, I was kind of on my own, and I've always been kind of a, and I mean, it's terrible to say, but I never really got along with anybody out there. I never meshed with anybody.
That kind of makes sense.
I was not them, you know. I wore cowboy boots. I drove a 1978 K5 Blazer.
Oh,
you know, I worked on my own car. I just wasn't them. Does that make sense?
It makes a lot of sense. And I mean, I've been in LA myself, and coming from Wisconsin, not the same kind of upbringing as you, but I started working at 12 myself as a caddy. Much more cushy job than the roofing. By a long shot.
A little more white.
Yes. Yes. Oh yeah. Yeah.
Yeah.
You go out to those things. But I mean, I did a bunch of different jobs, caddying, lawns as a bike mechanic, all that. Auntie Anne's pretzel roller. I had a high turnover in my jobs. I think the thing that you get when you start working that early is sort of like so many moments of work. I don't know what kind of a worker you were, but for me, I was like, I could not stand work, like the time I was spending to get the money I was getting. And I think when I had just the sense of an opportunity to make money doing something I kind of liked, I just held on super tight, you know? And it seems like maybe there's a similar thing with you of like, I'm not going back to that kind of a thing.
I mean, at one point, you know, when I was dating my wife, she goes, you gotta go get a job. She goes, you know, we're not making it. And I go, I can go work at Target, or I can go wait tables, or I can make $1,500 telling jokes for a weekend. I just got to get more of those.
Right.
So let me work on it. And it ultimately it worked out. But yeah, I mean, I just never meshed with those guys in LA, and I'm friends with them, and we all know each other. And, you know, I say hello, but I used to look at them and go, I don't name any names because I love comedians, and there's a comedian for everybody. So I don't ever say anything negative about comedians, but I would look at some of these guys and go, I don't want to be you. I don't want to be 45 years old, standing at the Comedy Store every night till 3 a.m. Mm-hmm. I want a wife. I want kids. You know, I want to wake up with my kids and take them to school. I want to coach Little League. I want to be involved. I have no, there's nothing inside of me that feels like I have to go to, I live here in Texas. I don't have to go to the mothership to hang out.
Right.
It's not in me. And I know, and I used to watch these guys and go, number one, you have a career. You have all the money in the world. I'm at the Comedy Store because I have to be, and I have to be seen, and I have to get better. But you have a career. I also know you have a wife and kids. Why are you here on a Tuesday till 3 o'clock in the morning?
Probably because he's got wife and kids.
But I get it, right? But yeah, I love my wife and kids. Yeah. And I want to wake up in the morning. So I was just cut from a different cloth. I have a life. I live a normal life. Comedy is not, it doesn't define who I am. You know what I mean?
Well, I think beyond that, you kind of, you can sort of see people who, if you spend all your time doing that, you miss out on the things that, like what you're saying, the little coaching Little League bit, you know, you don't have that if you are spending your time in that situation. I think that's a hard thing for comedians to figure out, especially as they get past a certain point, is how do I stay relatable when my life is now very unrelatable?
Right, know? Right. You know what it's like when your helicopter comes to pick you up. You get it. And it's like, no, dude. Yeah, I don't get it. You know, my private jet, like, oh, yeah, that's real freaking relatable. Right? Yeah. Well, I just started to admire the Ray Romanos and the Jeff Foxworthys and the Jim Gaffigans and the Larry the Cable guys. And I started looking at these guys and I said, man, these guys have a whole career and I don't see them at the Comedy Store every night.
Right.
You know, I want to be those guys. You know, Jeff Foxworthy lives in Georgia and has always lived in Georgia and does his church Bible study at a McDonald's on Tuesdays.
Mm-hmm.
And raises his kids and is happily married. And I'm like, that's what I want.
Yeah.
You know, and if you want that, you have to work it into your life, into your career. But like you said, it helps my stand up and it keeps me relatable.
Coaching Little League. What? there are a lot of parents out there. Some of them I know who are considering being a coach. Do you have any advice for them? Maybe three pieces of advice. Anything you want to tell them?
Don't be the head coach. Okay. Do not be the head coach. Do not have to break parents' hearts. You know, just like in comedy, you have delusional parents, you know, and you have to deal with that. I mean, I'm the assistant to the assistant to the assistant. And I still have parents calling me going, Steve, you know, I think this or I think that. Can you help us? And it's just like, I don't make the decisions. I go out there. I'm the hype man. I help out. I have fun. I want my kid to see that I'm involved so that when I go on the road, maybe someday when I'm dead and gone and my son's a grown man, he can say, you know what? My dad tried. You know, my dad went out of his way to be with me. My dad went out of his way to coach. So my advice is don't be the head coach, number one. Number two, shoot everybody completely straight.
Mm-hmm.
Right. Don't hold back. And once they learn that you're going to tell them the truth, they will stop calling.
Truth will set you free.
Yes. Once you sit there and you go, your kid has no business on this team, but he is on this team because your check cleared. And we're going to do our best to make him a better player because we love your kid.
Uh-huh.
But don't bitch because he sits on the bench because that's where he belongs right now. And all of a sudden, your phone call stops.
Mm-hmm.
So, mm-hmm. But I mean, I just love being involved.
Yeah.
I coach jiu-jitsu and football and baseball.
Yeah. Do you see in coaching, do you see sort of other coaches that do the thing where they take it too seriously?
Oh my God, dude, all the time. You know, and as a matter of fact, you know, I've had several times where I've had to go, hey man, let's go have coffee. And then we sit down and have coffee and I go, hey dude, they're eight. Like, are we aware that they're eight? You know, nobody's going to D1 baseball right now. Let's chill out.
Yeah.
Let's make it fun and let's have a good time doing it. Of course, we want to try to win, but dude, chill out. Oh, yeah. Some of these dads, I mean, winning a championship ring to them with eight-year-olds is their entire life.
That's what I was asking. Like, where does that... Is that it? Like they're sort of living vicariously through their kid, or do they think themselves that they're going to go from Little League to high school to college to the majors themselves? Like, where's the mentality? Is it for their kid or themselves?
I think there's a little bit of both. Really? I think there's a little bit of living vicariously through their kids, and then a little bit of, oh, I want my kid to go pro. You know, and my philosophy is, I'm just trying to raise a good man.
Yeah.
That's it. I want my kid to be a good man. Baseball teaches a lot of those lessons, how to win, how to lose, how to be a teammate, how to root for your teammate when they're not doing well, how to be a leader. I mean, it teaches a lot of things that I'm trying to teach. I'm not trying to raise a D1 athlete because his college is already paid for. You know, I want him to have a good time, hang out with his homies, stay out of trouble, and be a good man. That's my goal.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. That seems to make a lot of sense. Yeah. I just still imagine some of those like Little League coaches, they just see that Little League World Series on at the bar once a year and they're like, I want to be that guy, you know.
And they do. And And what they don't realize is, you know, my son is very, very good, man. And I mean, he's ranked at 9 years old. He is ranked as one of the best players in the country already.
Holy smokes.
And people come up to me and go, how do you do it? And I go, zero private lessons, number one. Number two, my son loves it. He absolutely wants to play all the time. And you know what I do? I play with him. Mm. It's that simple. I play with my kid. He freaking loves it and wants to play. I don't hire batting coaches, and I don't hire and all these other guys. Oh, he's got, you know, private lesson on Thursday and for batting. And then he's got a private lesson on Saturday morning for fielding. And I'm like, guys, you're beating these kids up. And I never yell at my kid. As a matter of fact, my kid will yell at me while we're practicing. I'll walk off and my son will go, Dad, where are you going? And my response, and he already knows my response. My relationship with you, son, is more important than baseball. And you're worked up, you're yelling, and that's not fun for me as a dad in our relationship. So I'm not upset that you missed the ball five times in a row. I don't care. You're the one making a big deal and I'm not comfortable with it. So I'm gonna go inside. And then he'll go, no, I'll fix it. I go, great. Because my relationship with you is more important than you hitting a home run.
Wow. Now, is that the way you were raised?
No.
Dude, how would your dad have handled that situation?
Dude, my dad would have been like, get your shit together. You dad, you want to play ball or not? Pick your glove up, put your ass down. Let's go. What is wrong with you? You're wasting my time. I mean, that's what I got, right? And then I'm over there crying. Now you're crying. You're crying, you little bitch. You know, and it's like, oh, awesome.
Dry him up, bro. I'll give you something to cry about.
Yeah. All healthy, Dad. This is awesome. I think I'm going to go be a comedian. Thanks for the abuse.
Yeah. Do you ever want your son to be a comedian? Feel like, you know, maybe you should give him a few more bits in his repertoire?
Ever. I don't want my kid in this business at all.
Yeah.
It is a dirty, gross business. And as a Mexican-American, he has no chance. It is impossible almost. And I hope that changes. And I hope that it gets better. But as a Latino in this business, it is literally almost impossible.
Yeah. Dive into that a little bit. You know, I'm a pretty white guy on both sides of the deal. So if I were doing roofing, I would be very sunburnt immediately. I would have melanoma right now.
They'd be calling you Weddle. They'd be like, oh, here comes the Weddle. You know, that means white guy.
Yeah.
So let's play a little game.
Yeah.
How many truly famous comedians who are of Latin descent have ever hosted SNL?
I can't tell you. I don't know.
There's zero. In 45 years of SNL, zero Mexican-American comedians have ever hosted SNL. Let's play another game. How many Mexican-American comedians that you know have had a network sitcom?
One.
Lopez. And then Cristela had one for a season.
Yeah, she was a guest. It was just a season, right?
Just one season.
Okay.
Only George Lopez is in sitcom syndication. How many? Now let's get rid of the idea of stand-up comedy, mm-hmm. right? How many leading Latino men can you think of? TV show, movies, anything. It's crazy, right? It Michael is. Peña, he works. Sofia Vergara, Eva Longoria, Salma Hayek, Antonio Banderas. But we're already running out of names.
Yeah. No, I
right.
Yep.
So how many black comedians have hosted SNL? The list goes on forever.
Right.
How many black comedians have had TV shows? The list goes on forever. How many Latinos have had HBO specials? Four in the history of comedy. So when you look at the numbers and you look at the odds of a Mexican-American working in this business, it is slim to none.
Mm.
Right? Because, like I said, you know, only George Lopez has had a sitcom. I've never even had a sitcom deal. not even a deal. The funny part is you're going to get a lot of comments. So I'm going to go ahead and answer those comments because people are going to go, oh my God, here we go. You know, he's crying about race. Why don't you just work harder? First of all, I'm not crying about it because I continue to work hard and I continue to succeed, right? Mm-hmm. I'm simply putting the facts out there, mm-hmm. right? And I had to work and I continue to work my butt off to continue to succeed. Every one of my specials is self-produced. I produced it. I paid for it. My wife directed it. I paid for it. No, I've never been given a special. Now, Simple Man was paid for partially by Netflix. And I greatly appreciate Netflix for doing that. But when you look at the scope of being a success as a Latino and a Mexican-American in the business, there's just not that many of them.
And you don't see that changing at all as even as you don't see that changing. Yeah, I guess you don't see that changing.
You try, you know, John Leguizamo, man, good for him. He you got to look at his Emmy speech because he talks about this exactly in his Emmy speech. And he says, well, tonight I'm less angry. He goes, because this is the first Emmys ever to have this many Latinos nominated. So I think Selena Gomez won something for Murderers in the Room or whatever. But John Leguizamo addresses it in his speech. And I hope it changes. And I fight very hard for it to change. And I hope, you know, I'm continuing to press forward to hopefully be that person are part of the people that make things change, you know. So I'm doing what I can and doing my part by doing my podcast with my wife, who is also Mexican-American, showing America that we can succeed. My specials have been successful. I sell tickets in Wisconsin. I sell tickets in Boston. I sell tickets in Canada, you know, proving that we can succeed. So hopefully there's somebody or something that can break that barrier to change it, because the bigger issue is that we're always the stereotype. Yeah. You know, every audition I get is accent, Spanish. Can you do that? I will say I am starting to get auditions that are just general auditions, which for the first time in my entire career, these past 5 years, I am getting general auditions, but not a lot, right? So, you know, when I started in this business in 1999, nobody had a TV show, and there was only three famous Latino stand-up comedians in the world, and that was George Lopez, Paul Rodriguez, and Carlos Mencia. Mm-hmm. In the world, three, and that was 1999. So for me to get in the business at 99 thinking, oh man, I got a shot, I was out of my mind, because at that point, George Lopez didn't even have a TV show.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, and in a lot of ways, you kind of look at where the industry as a whole is going, and that's frankly imploding in a large way. And a lot of what's happening is people are following people like you or people like me or whoever. They have sort of a niche audience, and then you get these sort of, like, you have a whole production company in addition to a touring thing, you know, with the podcast and your clips and all of that. And so you have these audiences that are kind of like, I like this thing, I'm subscribed to this, I guess, or I'm following this. I like this, I'm following that. Do you... Well, that is all the time we have for now. But if you want to listen to the Kripescast, the full episode, just look for Kripescast anywhere you get your podcasts.
So roll out the barrel and get the band brewing. Life's got you down, just keep her moving. It's on Wisconsin, the Badgers say it's the old Wisconsin Jubilee.
You know, sometimes when you're ice fishing, you put your foot into walleye hole and go ass over tea kettle and you think you're done. No, you gotta keep her moving.
You're listening to The Eagle, WLCX, Lacrosse's home for Up North News Radio.
Pat Kreitlow. Monday morning on Up North News Radio, the very latest on a close congressional race between Becca Cook and constantly caustic Congressman Derek Van Orden.
Up North News with Pat Kreitlow. Weekday mornings starting at 6. The Todd Alba Show.
Will White Schoolhouse behind us, the birthplace of the Republican Party. Executive Director of the Ripon Area Chamber of Commerce, Mandy Kimes.
Whether you love politics or you aren't even interested, there is something here because those ideals and values and lessons and courage can influence us today to be active citizens and to be willing to take a stand. And really, ordinary people in an ordinary place doing extraordinary things.
The Todd Alba Show. Weekdays, noon till 2 on your local civic media radio station and on the app. Enjoying this local program? Find the complete civic media soaring high above La Crosse. This is Eagle 1490 AM WLCX La Crosse and streaming everywhere on the Civic Media app.